The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
There have been more mass shootings in 2023 than there have been days of the year. 163 mass shootings so far this year. You have individuals like Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA making asinine comments like, it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment. So it's okay to kill people to keep the Second Amendment. In the face of this twisted gun culture, which continues to radicalize our politics and prevent any real efforts at solving questions around gun violence. My guest today has written a compelling and important story as someone who once helped build one of the world's most iconic gun companies. Ryan Bussey is today an ardent advocate for stricter gun laws, for a safer future for his sons, and for our country. He's the author of the new book, Gunfight, My Battle Against the Industry That Radicalized America, and he joins me for an important conversation about how we, as citizens, regain the high ground on gun violence, gun control, and the safety and security of our communities. Right after this. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. So, every once in a while you go through what's going on in the news and what's happening in culture and society, and you want to take a moment and just kind of do a data check and just sort of get a reassessment. Are we looking at this thing the right way? Are we understanding the problems the right way? And never more important moment to do that than now, given what the country has been experiencing with gun violence since the beginning of the year, when you have more people being killed, mass shootings, than there are days in the year so far, we've got a problem. And I thought it would be great to have someone on who understands this from a myriad of perspectives, is sober in his thinking, and I think has something to say to all of us about the moment. So I want to welcome Ryan Bussey to the podcast. Man, it's really, really great to have you here, man.
You know, Michael, it's it's really good to be with you. I appreciate the work that you're doing and the courageous stances and that you've taken. And I mean, they're courageous, but they're essential, right? Did you really have a choice? I don't know. But
right.
Sure do like being here and appreciate being on the pod.
Absolutely. So let's, if you could, in your book, and we're definitely going to dissect the book. I've got my copy. I've been going through it. Gunfight, My Battle Against the Industry That Radicalized America. Could you set the stage for us a little bit? Because I don't think people I think for some people, and myself included, and I just say for disclosure, I am a recent gun owner. I have never felt the need to own a gun, although I was I've been a strong supporter of the Second Amendment and over the years. But in the last few years, a couple of years, decided that I would get trained up, learn it, and I have a healthy fear of the weapon. So I want to put that on the table so folks know how the conversation is going. I'm not someone who's looking, at the issue. I'm a part of that story. Help us understand how this thing has gotten so off track, man. I sit there sometimes and I go, we were having conversations about the Second Amendment back in the 80s, in the 90s, and they weren't as toxic and as threatening and as bad as they are now. Can you, coming from your perspective in the industry, the NRA, all of that, how would you assess it?
Well, real quick, to illustrate your point and kind of the point you always make, like, hey, this ain't your daddy's Republican Party. Remember, the chief lobbyist for the 1994 assault weapons ban that Bill Clinton signed was none other than, drumroll please, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan sent letters to every member of Congress urging passage of that bill. That gives you an idea of how much our country has changed.
Right.
To set the stage with me, I'm very critical of the firearms industry. I'm very critical of gun culture in America. I'm very critical of the way it's wound around the far right. I am, however, I was a 25-year veteran sales executive in the firearms industry. I grew up on a rural ranch where many of the best days of my life were spent with guns, hunting with my dad or my brother or my friends or my father. I still own many guns. I shoot and hunt with my boys every chance I get. I believe in the right to self-defense. And also, I'm troubled by how divided our country is, how vitriolic it is, how guns now are the central totem of the right wing and the Republican Party, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't send out Christmas cards with a Chevy truck on them. She sends them out with an AR-15, Thomas Massey and Lauren Boebert. Why is that? It's because the NRA figured out that hate, fear, and conspiracy could drive irrational political outcomes. Those same things drive gun sales. They're all wound together now as the central totem of the Republican Party and the far right. And the spillover effects in Kansas City, when a young 16-year-old honor student gets shot for pushing a doorbell, or 19 kids in Uvalde, like, it's all wound around this mess, and it is a mess.
I try to figure that arc. I mean, and I appreciate you starting with Reagan, and how far removed we are from that moment today. Was it just the idea that, hey, we can get paid? There is a consortium, a group, of whatever you want to call it, a horde of individuals out there who will buy what we sell on this narrative. What transformed the gun industry? I mean, looking at the NRA, for example, which was about gun safety, gun education, you know, even gun reforms, which a lot of its members supported. What was the trigger? I mean, was it just about the Benjamins? Was it just about the power? I guess...
Yeah, both of those. Yeah.
Did the culture, I guess I put it to you this way, Ryan, did the culture change the industry, or did the industry change the culture?
So I think the industry tapped into basic truths about human nature in the same way, you know, I've heard you, I've been on Charlie Sykes' podcast. I know you guys have talked about with Charlie, like, Charlie has this phrase he uses a lot, lizard brain, right? There's something inside humans that is basic and unchangeable. The NRA figured out that and they were the first to really do it. If you create existential zero-sum battles, it's all or nothing. We will. The other side is trying to snuff us out. They're trying to ruin our culture. They're trying to take all of our guns. Like, there's, you notice there's not a shred of nuance in any of that.
Right.
they figured out that could drive people to do unbelievable, devoted, and irrational things, like eventually elect Donald Trump, which seemed irrational to so many of us.
Right.
And the far right now does exactly the same. The Republican Party does exactly the same. Just yesterday, you saw Trump post, like, it's on the abortion debate, right? They've stolen the same thing. It's not about a nuanced debate about viability or where life begins or in the middle or 15 weeks or 24 weeks or whatever. Trump now said yesterday, the Democrats want to kill all babies, live babies, right after they're born. This is a page right out of the NRA playbook because it works. And so you ask, did the chicken or egg come first? I really think that these are just basic things that are inside humans. And it's easy for entities like the NRA and then Trump to get the worst out of people. We have to get the best out of people.
Well, so I want to put a pin in that point about that you just made about Trump and all, because you have the chapter that speaks to speaking truth to bullshit.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do we begin to speak truth to that bullshit? But I want to lay a little bit more foundation in understanding exactly how effed up this platform is for those people who feel trapped by it. I think the general sense of a lot of Americans is we can't fucking fix this thing. We mm-hmm. can't change this because every time we look to do it, someone's going to wave even the Second Amendment and go, you're coming after my guns. You know, and I'm like, fool, ain't nobody coming after your guns.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we know enough to know that when there are 400 plus million guns in the hands of 320 million citizens, the idea of going after guns is not only a red herring, it is the quintessential essence of bullshit.
Yeah. So you see, good policy and good people lose when you wring the nuance out of stuff. And to your point right there, that's an argument designed by the NRA. It's not like, well, should we have universal background checks that pull at 85% and have since Columbine, by the way? Like,
right.
Michael, freaking ice cream does not pull at 85%. Okay. Universal, lots of Republicans support universal background checks. And yet it does not pass, not even since Columbine. We've been fighting this battle since 1999. Why? Because the NRA instantly takes it to this zero-sum battle. And if we can do one thing as decent citizens, lovers of democracy, reasonable, decent people, we can say, wrong, stop. It's not a zero-sum game. To your point, nobody's coming to take your guns. Can we as decent citizens do things that make things marginally better? Or are we going to keep doing things that make things marginally worse? I don't like the worst track. We're on the worst track. The last thing I'll tell you is much of this does not require two-thirds Senate majority, big votes, because just like Trump, most of the things that have happened to firearms culture over the last 15, 20 years were voluntary breakdown of norms. They weren't changes in laws.
Right.
The industry once knew not to propagate tactical gear and AR-15s everywhere. They weren't illegal, but they just knew not to do it. Why? Because anybody can see that sort of marketing and these guns everywhere all the time is going to lead to bad shit. And it has led to bad shit.
It has. And I think that's where the frustration for a lot of folks lies, is that you see the crap right in front of you and you're trying to do everything in your power not to step in it, to avoid it, to walk around it, to pick it up, to clean it up. And yet you still feel that you have these political forces, these industry forces that keep pulling America back towards the pile of shit in front of them that they're trying desperately to get around.
Yeah.
When I look at my party, and I'm still a member of the Republican Party for a host of reasons, and I see what has transpired with respect to this conversation, it's not an honest conversation at all. It is something that when you watch, and I know a number of members of the NRA board, some of whom are, you know, were intertwined and still are intertwined with the GOP. How has that worked to sort of further facilitate? Because I don't think this really, the NRA doesn't maximize its potential, and I'll put it in this term, destruction of the arguments around gun safety. And even though they advocate it and promote it, which they really don't, but I don't think that really sustains itself without that political power, without that force of politics behind it. Because it's not a question, I don't think, Ryan, of, oh, gee, we're worried about legislation. What I, you know, anyone who understands what lobbying is about, lobbying is not about getting shit passed. It's about preventing shit from getting passed.
Yeah, so here's a great metaphor, I think, and I think it's so apt for Republican politics, the things that frustrate you. And you mentioned you're still a member of the party. People ask me, like, if you fought against the industry for so long from the inside, why'd you stay in? And the same reason you do, because I felt like I could have more impact by being the thorn inside it than I could from the outside it. Right. Now, unlike you, I got to the point where I'm like, okay, this is bigger than me and I got to fight it from the outside.
Well, can I write there? Because that's why I'm glad you went there, because this is from the piece you wrote back in May of 2022. Where you taught the titled, and it was in the Bulwark, even the gun industry knew we would end up here. And you talked about your decision to attend a Black Lives Matter rally in 2020, and how that began to change a lot for you. And you says, when I started in the industry, it wanted nothing to do with extremism. I stayed as long as I did because I believed in the ideals and values that I learned growing up as a ranch kid, as a hunter, and as someone who still appreciates the craftsmanship of well-built firearms. I thought I could keep the industry from changing, and then I spent years fighting to hold a battle line within it. By that day in 2020, I had begun to process of getting out of the gun business. That was a transformative moment for you. I'll be honest, I'm getting close to mine inside the GOP. And again, this goes back to the question I was posing about the power of the politics sort of pushing and animating the industry in a way and in a direction. And what I took from your quote there was when you saw that, you began to recognize that it was pulling you too. That force was pulling you in a direction that was not consistent with your values.
Yeah, so I began to realize much. Look, I know, I read and watch and I know all the stuff you do. So I know this sort of internal, I don't even think it's a battle you have. I know where your morals are. Yeah. And you get to a point where you say, am I changing it, or are they actually feeding off of me too? Am I unwillingly providing them street cred that I don't want to? And I got to the point, I'm like, yeah, screw this. I'm out of here. They don't get to claim that somebody like me is a part of them, because I'm not a part of them. I'm done. And it didn't have to be that way, much in the same way the party doesn't have to be that way. You know, and I posit in the book that the NRA became Trumpism. So the same stuff you're dealing with, I dealt with 10, 15 years ago. I think a really useful metaphor for where we are right now is the universal background check thing. And think of it like why it doesn't pass, because this is so applicable to all this stuff. Think of it like the GOP, universal background checks are like this big beam in your house. And for the GOP, they're like, yeah, okay, there's asbestos in there. It's really bad. We might get cancer over time. Perhaps we should pull the beam out. And then somebody else says, wait a second, that beam holds up the whole house. So they end up dealing with the asbestos, knowing it's giving everybody cancer, and nobody will touch it because they're like, dude, you pull that out, the whole house crumbles, right?
Right.
And so nothing is long-term. They don't care about the long-term implications of the democracy, of the people, of anything. They care about whether their power structure is going to stay in place. That's where we are.
So that then brings us to this book. And folks, I really cannot recommend it enough to you, Gunfight. Walk us through your thinking in putting words on paper that really, it, for me at least, kind of reveals and dissects this whole narrative down to a point where you there are a lot of aha moments. where you can begin to see, oh, okay, just like the point you just made. So, oh, now that kind of makes sense. I understand that. Where did you want to go with this book, and what did you want people who particularly are trying to figure out how the hell do we deal with this issue of guns in our country?
Well, I want people much, I mean, these are the same things that you and Charlie and Tim Miller and Bill Kristol and everybody wrestle with all the time. You know, like we have to understand how we got here if we're going to dismantle this. We have to realize how the arguments and fervor and emotion and hatred and conspiracy were all formed up if we're going to hope to unravel it. And what I guess what I wanted people to know is I didn't really make arguments throughout the book. What I said is, this was my life. This right. is what happened to me. You do with it what you will. And I think it's pretty clear. You can see the formation of the modern GOP. You can see how gun extremism now threatens. I mean, it threatens a kid in inner city Chicago. It threatens a school kid in Uvalde, Texas. And it threatens our democracy. It's a pretty damn big effing issue, you know?
Yeah.
And I just wanted people to deal with, because nobody, if you look for Gun Industry Insider or Truth Telling or anything, any other books, I can tell you, there isn't one that exists. It's that book's 352 pages, mine is, and that's the sum total of all this. And that tells you how cultish the whole industry and political intertwining is. And somebody's got to tell the truth about that.
So how do we break that? How do we break into that? How does the country correct its course when it comes to guns? Where is it? Is it legislation? Is it a cultural change? Is it attitudinal changes that begin to have an impact on changing the trajectory of gun violence in this country? As I said coming into this, we've had more mass shootings and deaths since January 1 than we've had days in the year. Mm-hmm. And so how do we get off of that cycle where a mass shooting today followed by another mass shooting 38, 48 hours later, followed by another mass shooting 2 weeks later, everyone's kind of numb.
Well, the first thing is
thoughts and prayers are like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah. First thing is we can't be numb to it. We have to be shocked by it. We have to continue to do that. I guess what my belief is, we got into this through 25 years of or 30 years of bad decisions, and we're not going to get out of it with one specific thing. People ask me all the time. I was speaking yesterday, like, Ryan, how do we solve gun violence? I'm like, oh boy, you ain't going to solve it. Okay. Right. You're going to make it better. And it's both cultural, social norms, and through legislation. It's a combination of things. Oftentimes in a country like yours, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Michael, but our laws are really just enumerations of cultural beliefs that we have. They just sort of reinforce what we want to do anyway. And here's an example I give people who want to know how we can get somewhere. Think about this. 1987, you could still fly on a plane and smoke cigarettes. The first law to regulate cigarettes on planes happened in 1987, and it said you can't smoke on a flight of 2 hours or more, or you can for 2 hours or more. 2 hours or less, you can't smoke, right? That was, you went in a bar, you smelled like cigarettes for a week. Everybody smoked everywhere. We had lung cancer rates that were through the sky. Now, we didn't ban cigarettes, but through time, we made things much better. There are now no smoking in public places. You can't even imagine doing it on a plane, even though they still mention it in the security announcements. I don't know why. But you think about how far culturally we've come on cigarettes and tobacco without banning, without, you know, just massive. You can still go down and buy cartons of cigarettes today if you want. Go try it. I'm sure you can. But we've made things so much better in the country through a combination of cultural pressure and some litigation and some laws, right? That's what the people who want to live in a democracy do the hard work in that gray space. That's what we got to get back to.
But Ryan, you don't have a constitutional right to smoke. And I think that's the color on this that makes this conversation that much harder, because the default position for the hardheads out there is, you didn't ban cigarettes, but you could have. If you wanted to, the cigarette industry took a real drubbing, but they recalibrated and adjusted, et cetera. But there was no ban that would not be the approach with guns. I mean, you can almost see, I mean, I love that. I appreciate that cigarette analogy because it is logical. It makes sense. And it does speak to how the country has in the past dealt with these sort of tricky cultural issues that, you know, health, science, other things are saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that anymore.
Yep.
And everybody's like, well, you know, if we bring this up, people are going to get pissed. And it's like, well, yep. we'll just talk about it subtly. That's not guns. I mean, it is amazing to me that, for example, you have the numbnut governor of Florida pushing, feeding the Republican-led control legislature in Florida to now just wild, wild west, baby, permitless carry, right? You don't even need that. You don't even know how to operate a frigging firearm now to carry it. You want it, put it on your hip and go out.
26 states, Michael. That's a 26 state.
So that's we're a long way from that sort of, okay, well, we'll just sort of ease the country into a space where we can get better results with respect to gun violence, understanding the weapon. I don't know what we do, Ryan. I think that's frustration.
Yeah. Two things can be true at the same time.
True.
The first one is, because of all the stuff you just described, we have 415 million guns in the United States. We only have 267 million registered vehicles. So when you get out on the road and you look at all those cars, you're like, holy shit, it's a lot of cars.
Right. Yeah,
150 million more guns than that. And we've got a lot of troubled people, if you haven't noticed, just like any other place on the globe does.
Right.
And we've got a lot of vitriolic media and hatred and conspiracy theory and multiple now crazy guys from Florida who are leaders of the GOP. One wears weird white boots when he visits hurricane sites.
I don't know what that was about.
The other one has a strange comb over and has orange makeup. Again, strange, but I guess my point here is it ain't going to get better for a while. Okay. The on the ground truth, the Kansas Cities, the Ralph Yarls, the girl in Albany, the Uvaldes, get ready. Because this is the path the GOP, combined with the gun industry and the NRA, have set for our country. And these ships turn really freaking slow. It's a big-ass ship. It's going to turn slow. That being said, I really believe citizens are just not going to have it. And yes, we have a constitutional right to guns. You don't have a constitutional right to offense. You have a constitutional right to defense. Yeah. Okay? We're going to find our feet. Citizens like my kids are going to rise up and demand it, because it's not okay that a 16-year-old honor student goes to look for his brother and sister and rings a doorbell and gets shot twice. It's not okay. Yeah. It's not okay.
The book is Gunfight, My Battle Against the Industry That Radicalized America. We're talking to the author, Ryan Boosey. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into how we speak truth to bullshit right after this. Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele Podcast. We are having a great conversation with Ryan Boosey, who is the author of Gunfight, My Battle Against the Industry That Radicalized America. I mentioned a little bit earlier, Ryan, one of the chapters that really made a lot of sense to me, and I think it's a trigger for a lot of people, is how do we begin to reframe this conversation despite the efforts of the gun lobby, the NRA, you know, whacked out Republicans, to begin to push back on the bullshit narratives that are used to justify doing nothing, and trying to change the system. One of the things that I've made great note of, and you talked about the political pressure in this chapter exerted by young people. I watched and was inspired by what happened after the Stoneman Douglas shooting.
Yep.
When those students took it upon themselves not to have a repeat of other mass shootings, where everyone thoughts and prayers, oh my God, the children, and then do nothing.
Yep.
These kids went and protested. They sat in the offices of Florida legislators. And they eventually got some reforms done. Speak a little bit to that. Speak a little bit to calling out the bullshit and the role in particular that movement politics, and I don't mean that in sort of the pejorative way that some people like to talk about it, but seriously, genuine movement politics that is inspired and is organic. It's not necessarily organized and constructed as we've seen in the past, that could actually be a way of sort of cracking the code on this.
Yeah, so the most important thing I remember from college was a simple little statement I took in a religion class from the professor. And he stood up, I don't know why it struck me, but he said, "We have a Statue of Liberty on one coast, and if that's going to stand, we must have a Statue of Responsibility on the other coast." Now, obviously we don't have, that's a figurative statement, but
right.
So I guess the first thing I'm going to say is we have to take back the message and refuse to say that we're some kind of crazed commie socialist people who want to take people's rights away. That's absolutely not true. The most patriotic thing you could do is know that your rights must be balanced with responsibilities so that you protect the rights of everyone. And I even go so far as to say, people like me who are proposing these things and advocating for them, we're the real Second Amendment patriots. Why? Because we will do what it takes to maintain our rights. I am done with the right side of the aisle saying they're the only patriots out there. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. Patriots don't jeopardize, don't care only about freedom. They care about responsibility too. And I'm taking that back, right? The responsible people who care about their Second Amendment rights will do what it takes to hold the country together and protect the rights of other people. So all of our rights exist in 15 or 20 years. If you have another insurrection that's successful around guns, do you think that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Second Amendment is going to mean a damn thing?
Right.
No,
right.
Absolutely not.
Yep.
How is that patriotic? Secondarily, I think the kids, to your point, already kind of sense this. They are, talk about speaking truth to bullshit. They are done with it. I mean, my kids are hunters and shooters and gun owners, and they've had to do school shooter drills. They are done with it. They don't care what the NRA says. They don't buy into the all or nothing definitions. They don't care what Ron DeSantis thinks is politically expedient. They care about doing what's right. And I'm warning people. You talk about movement politics. These kids are coming. I'm warning you. And you've heard it from lots of other people. These kids are coming, and they are not going to take bullshit from anybody.
They're not. And I think to that very important point, for all those out there who want to wrap themselves in the Second Amendment, I think their actions or lack thereof, their defense of the current status quo, their lack of sincerity in the face of egregious harms to children and to families and communities, could actually be the thing that weakens their position on the Second Amendment more than anything else.
Totally agree. Look, let's step back for a second. Why is it that do we have this government and this country and this democracy? Why is it? It's to guarantee people the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, right? That's it. When you have a movement like the GOP and the NRA and the gun movement, they would have you believe that the entire thing exists simply so they can own guns. That's not what the government, that's not what we're doing here, folks. And so when your right, quote unquote, when this right gets so out of balance that it jeopardizes the whole existence of the system, of the thing that we care about, the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness, like we got a problem. And I think what you're indicating, Michael, and I totally agree, is it's teetering dangerously effing close to jeopardizing all of that right now.
Yeah, I really do. I really believe that. And I think you're right, because the reality of it is, and particularly with this generation, folks are underestimating how they are approaching this system. And it is not, I heard someone say recently, a Washington type say, that, oh yeah, well, these Gen Zers, you know, wait till they have to start paying taxes, wait till they quote grow up, wait till this, wait till that. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. These kids have been working since they were 14, 15 years old. They've been paying tax. They've seen the system. They've been inside the system. They've watched what it's done to their parents. They've watched what it's done to their grandparents. And they've watched the issues they care about get crapped all over. And so now they're beginning to find the ways in which they're asserting their authority and their power. They're not waiting for your permission to run for office. They're not waiting for your permission to advocate on an issue. And so I think you're absolutely right. They will change the game in a way that is profound. So to that point, Ryan, do you see this change in this gun narrative being one that's done culturally first or legislatively first? So, and the reason I ask it that way is because I was thinking again about the Stoneman Douglas kids. That was less of a cultural push, although they did, you know, people were watching around the world what was going on there. And there was some sort of movement when they, you know, told high school kids across the country, hey, join us on this day on a sit out or whatever, something like that. But it wasn't anything sustained. They just did the hard, gritty, dirty work of legislative process, right? Yeah. So how do you see that playing out?
I actually am a pretty big proponent. I think we have a bad, bad culture problem. Laws are going to have to come. I'll take an example here. And I, like you, Michael, I have this sense that the far right on this issue is not nearly as big, not nearly as numerous as they like to say they are, much like you think about the Republican Party. They're loud. They're scary. But they're not as new. And they're also so fragile. I mean, if you have to march into the Michigan Capitol with AR-15 screaming at lawmakers about some such thing, that is the most fragile bullshit I have ever seen. Now, it's scary and it's intimidating and it is all those things, but they use it because it's scary and intimidating and because just a few people can exert so much power and hold the microphone for so long, just like Trump is doing to the Republican Party. We have to reverse that culture. And like, so I would say an example of a combination of things to address this is we should not be okay with open carry in the United States, period. It should be illegal. Right. A democracy cannot function at the barrel of a gun. It cannot. So I think culturally we should shout that down. Like, you know, when you're in the street and you see these, which we do across the West, often guys carrying AR-15s protesting out in the open. No. We should stop and say, dude, you're weird. Put that away. This is not the way democracies function. And we should have legislation that outlaws it. See, we should have a combination of things, culture and legislation.
You talk about getting where we are now over a period of, you know, 30 years of a series of, as you put it, incremental decisions that made things worse. And I think that in many respects, to your point, is how we kind of justify the culture, and we justify the lack of it doing anything more. We've actually heard Republicans say, well, we're done on guns. There's no more to do in the face of everything else that we see happening.
Yeah.
The attitude,
and you know why? Because they don't sense the political pressure. The reason 65 senators came together last year, I was at the White House signing ceremony. I talked to John Cornyn. I thanked him for the courage that he showed. Now, he didn't show enough, and the Republican Party didn't show enough, but they showed some. 65 senators voted yes on something. And as we mentioned earlier about polling, again, 65 senators wouldn't vote yes on that thing on ice cream that we talked about. Right. They just wouldn't. But they did on this. And Michael, as you know, politicians are not leaders in this way. They follow what they believe the base of their voters want them to do. So that meant there was something bubbling up from the voter base, from the culture that told them, it told Mitch McConnell, right? Oh, shit, I better do this or the midterms are going to be way worse than I thought. So culturally, we can do this and it will force political action. It's not going to force it in gerrymandered districts. It probably won't force it in Tennessee. I mean, what a shit show that is. Mm-hmm. And it won't force it in some states, but it could force it federally.
Well, and I think that's where I think a lot of the sort of pressure needs to come to bear. It is surprising to me that we've not seen more citizens, even though we see polling that says 90% want X, mm-hmm. 75% want Y. Citizens haven't really pressed that at the ballot box. They've not pressed that through protest. They've not pressed that the way we saw the Stoneman Douglas kids do with confronting their legislators with the fact that they want this change. Why do you think that is? Why do we sit back and kind of complain about it, but then we don't get...
Because they're better, because the Republicans are a lot better at basal politics than Democrats are. Come on. A lot of times, Democrats, sadly, can't organize a rock fight. I mean, and I consider myself one, right? But the Republicans are very good. They know, they can talk about background checks, and 5 minutes after they do it, we're going to tell them it's a zero-sum game, and really the Democrats are coming after all your guns. Like, they're a lot better at going to these polar arguments that make legislation hard to pass. Republicans are just good at it. They're better at it. They message at it better. But something the Republicans might want to understand, Republican moms don't like dropping their kids off at school worrying about whether they're going to make it through a school shooting either. Mm-hmm. Republican moms have 16-year-old honor students that knock on the wrong doors. Republican moms in suburbia have 20-year-old daughters that make wrong turns in driveways too. Like, this, if this keeps going, I'm here to warn the Republicans. This is going to be an issue you are not going to win on anymore. You're going to lose on. People are going to run on it. You're old enough to know, Michael, that Democrats used to just not touch the gun issue,
right?
Because they thought it was politically toxic. I'm about ready to feel that it's going to become politically toxic for Republicans on the other way, on the other side of the coin, if things don't start to change.
So does it become politically toxic through policy? And I'm using this term as loosely as I can, ideas like arming school teachers, putting guns in classrooms, and this concept of, you know, good guy, you know, a good guy with a gun will prevent a bad guy with a gun from doing harm. But that was not the case that we saw in Texas, right? That was not the situation at Robb Elementary School, where the law enforcement, seemingly all that firepower, were paralyzed to do anything. How do these arguments seep into the conversation in such a way that people actually believe this bullshit, that if we give Mrs. Jones, who's a third grade teacher, a semi-automatic weapon, and that she's going to keep where, by the way, in her desk or in a box that she then has to go get the key to unlock at the time bullets are flying through the door of the classroom? I mean, what is the logic?
Let's face it. Come on. It's silly talk. Okay. The Buffalo grocery store. Kid travels across New York to find an African-American grocery store that he had targeted. There's a cop there, an armed cop. Okay. The good guy with a gun is there. The kid kills the cop because he's wearing bulletproof vest. He gets shot at. He returns fire. He kills the cop. The good guy with a gun is standing there with a gun, and it does not work. Teachers. We put so much on our teachers. We ask them to fix, like, hungry kids and single families and debates about gay or not gay, or like all this stuff that we're piling on our teachers. And we want to give them guns too? Right. Are you crazy? I mean, that is such silly talk. And it will only make things worse. And so I think we have to just, you talk about saying truth to bullshit. Those things are bullshit. They are bullshit. And Democrats need to say they're bullshit.
They do. And they've not been very effective at doing that, at calling it out. And my hope is that not just in the context of the politics, Democrat versus Republicans, but in the context of citizens, who, lawful gun owners, non-gun owners, people who care about the safety and security of every citizen within the Republic,
yeah,
versus those who have sort of this sort of anarchy, anarchist view of America, this sort of authoritarian, anti-democratic view of America.
I mean, who's the real patriot there?
Right. That's the question. Who's the real patriot?
Yeah, and that I'm done with the right side owning the flag and the definition of patriot and all this other shit. I think another interesting thing politically that I anticipate happening is, much like the Republican Party kind of feels like the dog that caught the car with the Dobbs decision, like,
right,
oh crap, this worked a lot better for us politically before we actually did it. The same thing is happening with guns because of the Bruin decision and because of so many things. Like, it's a lot better politically for the right side of the aisle to use this. Do you really want these Kansas City incidents? You really want more of the Uvalde? You really think, as horrific as they are, just think about the political impacts. I don't think those political impacts are good for Republicans. Right. Like, and you really want less regulation in Florida on gun owners? Have you been in Florida traffic? Do you know what road rage is? Like, it's not going to end well.
So the last thing before I let you jump, because I know you're doing a lot on the book right now and getting out there. When you wrote this, and I'm sure it was cathartic, and you can tell in the writing that some of the stories that you relay really kind of brings a perspective that a lot of people did not have or wouldn't appreciate at the time. What has been the response to your book by the industry, the response to you as someone who was not just a member, but a leader inside the industry, coming out and as we kind of the theme of this conversation, speaking truth to bullshit, putting out there in a way that the LaPierres and others have to face a different kind of music, a new music, if you will, in this gun narrative?
So two answers to that. The industry has responded in the way that you would have guessed. I don't get a lot of Christmas cards from the firearms industry. Let's just say that. People who I, you know, who I was personal friends with for multi-decades, went to their weddings or mourned their parents passing at funerals. They don't talk to me. They consider me a pariah almost to the letter. On the other hand, something that is very hopeful. I thought my family may be attacked both digitally and obviously physically. We were worried about all sorts. I live in a very conservative part of Montana. We were worried about all those sorts of things. The response has been exactly the opposite of what I anticipated. It's 95-5 positive to negative. Good. I get up in the morning and yes, I get the thoughtless FU notes that you and everybody else in this movement get, you know, the type, but I get hundreds of these well thought out, beautifully written, grammatically correct notes, direct messages, emails saying, thank you for doing this. I didn't understand it. I'm a gun owner too. I can't take this anymore. I used to vote Republican. It's gone off the rails. My point here is there is reason for hope. The vast frustrated majority out there, I heard you talk about on a recent podcast with Larry Hogan. Mm-hmm. They are out there. They're going to break through. They're going to break through this fragility. I really believe it. And people like you and I and other folks have to give them a lane to do it. So I'm hopeful.
Well, Ryan, you created a lane, and it's a very wide lane. And I'm asking my fellow Americans to get in that lane with you. The changes that we desire to secure the future and safety of our kids starts with each one of us speaking truth to the bullshit and being honest about what's happening and what we're allowing to happen to our country at the altar of the Second Amendment. No one wants to, take your gun. No one wants to, get rid of the Second Amendment. All we want to be able to do is send our kids to school, go to the grocery store, hang out at a nightclub, visit a movie theater, make the inadvertent mistake of driving up someone's driveway or knocking on the wrong door, and then being able to come home and laugh about it the next day.
Amen.
That's all we want.
Amen.
Brian Boosey, he is the author of Gunfight, My Battle Against the Industry That Radicalized America. I can't express enough how much I appreciate you coming on and having this conversation. I really hope our listeners got a little bit out of it, a lot out of it, actually. And, you know, really take a moment, grab the book, and begin to see this story and understand the purpose that Ryan has brought to this conversation in a new way. Ryan, thanks so much, my man.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. That does it for this moment, folks. I'm so glad you could drop by the podcast. Really appreciate it when you do. Don't forget to do that voodoo that I love when you do, and that is to do the download, share it with your friends, share this episode with friends who are interested about this issue, especially get them to get a copy of Gunfight as well. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan D. Boosse, B-U-S-S-E. And you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Certainly the podcast at Steele_podcast. Until next time, folks, be safe, be well, and get ready. Summer's coming. That's what they keep telling me, even though it's like 60 degrees outside. But anyway, take care, everybody.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.